left us years ago. So there ain't no fate except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt. And that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.
And we are the Nonprofits. And here you are, listening to Dennis Loubet, along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser, babbling to you live on the 20th of August, 2014, from a comfortable location in Austin, Texas, about how we're all so oppressed by the religious, when, of course, at the same time, people are having tear gas, rubber bullets fired at them from armored personnel carriers by local police in Ferguson for the heinous crime of demanding justice while black. This show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. If you want to learn more about the ACA instead of educating yourself about how ISIS is beheading journalists in Iraq, you can call their voicemail at 512-220-6561, or if you're too busy ignoring the Ebola outbreak in Liberia, visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. Since we're not working tirelessly to end the deportation of refugee children back to Honduras where they can be killed, the nonprofit's broadcasts are much more important message live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8:30 Central Time. You can join the nonprofit's chat room instead of protesting the fact that 85 richest people in the world own as much wealth as the 3.5 billion poorest by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So sit back, forget the oncoming climate change extinction event, and enjoy the show.
You're right. That was one of your more brutal introductions.
Yes. Just because there's something more important doesn't mean your concerns are trivial.
Oh, that's the point of that? I thought you were okay. Good. I'm glad you think it was.
Oh,
it made me very sad.
People, you know, try to poo-poo anyone's, you know, cause by saying, "Oh, but look, there's something more important, blah blah blah," right? You know, why are you wasting your time on this trivial thing when this more important thing should be getting all your attention?
I'll actually agree that a lot of the stuff we discuss on this show is less important than some of those issues that you brought up.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. Issues are our issues.
Yeah, then that's what this hour and a half is for discussing, is these things. And those things as they cross over,
yes,
peripherally related.
Yes, that is a logical fallacy. And
have we done anything on ISIS? ISIS is the one thing you mentioned that. I guess climate change can also
relevant to us.
Can chopping also heads off, killing children. Hold
it. Climate change can also be relevant when the opposition to recognizing that scientific fact is religiously motivated.
Right.
I guess any of this crap that's religiously motivated can be relevant to us. I don't know of a religion angle in Ferguson. Particularly.
Oh, there isn't one. It's
not that I'm aware
of. It's not the point. Yeah.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hello.
I wasn't actually talking to you guys. I was talking to our listeners.
Oh, wow.
Well, we're
funny,
part of
funny,
everybody.
They never seem to chime in during the show.
Oh, Jeff.
I bet they could be screaming out loud at their computers right
God,
now.
God, our
they
listeners are a creepy disembodied voice coming from the walls. I didn't know we were so popular among the undead demographic.
Undead Americans. And but we have a lot of listeners overseas too, so it'd be undead humans.
I think they prefer to refer to themselves as differently alive Americans.
How do we get on that? We don't think you're undead, folks. I don't know what Russell's talking about. All right, so should we start? Let's just start with this big issue. I don't have a lot of different listener mails this week. On account of way more than half of the responses that we got since last episode were about the one story with the Muslim guy at the supermarket.
Everybody focused on one thing.
For those of you who missed that episode, we covered a story where I believe this is in the UK. A Muslim guy worked at a supermarket, refused to check out a lady's groceries because she had like pork or wine or pork and wine and something, and it was Ramadan. And he was fasting, and somehow he led him to believe that he couldn't serve her himself, and he pointed her over to the automated checkout lanes. And this became a news story.
And I think the general positions were you and I thought, well, tough shit, do your job. And Tracy maybe pitched in a little for
yep.
Well, that's not how the listeners saw it at all, Russell.
Okay.
The listeners saw it, and I actually agree that Tracy had a lot to say in this subject. She brought up an analogy of to discuss the issue of reasonable accommodation, right? The principle of reasonable accommodation, whereby employers have to do, you know, reasonable things to accommodate the needs of their employees. And she used an example of, I think it was a deaf person who was up for a job where she worked, and it was possible to acquire a machine that would enable this person to work the telephone, and that doing so was a reasonable accommodation, right?
Right.
Well, we got a lot of responses, and I'm not going to read them all. It's just there's too many. But they did sort of boil down to just a few major points that we can discuss,
yeah.
You know, separate from the individual emails thereof. A lot of people brought up various disagreements with the Muslim's interpretation of his own religion, right? But so what if it's Ramadan, the Muslim religion doesn't say that you can't check somebody out while you're fasting, or that you ever are not allowed to check somebody out who's buying those things. I'm not sure how this is relevant. Do you guys know how is this really an issue? How would this apply to the question of whether that guy was within his rights?
Well, you're going, okay, you know, he could have taken the interpretation that, oh, I just can't eat any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And he could check it out, no problem.
Right. He could, but
he
didn't.
But he went further and said, no, I can't even touch the plastic packaging on such items.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's how far he took it. But, you know, there are people of all different interpretation.
Right.
We know with Christianity, there are multi-bazillion different ways that different Christians interpret the meanings of their holy book.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy came up with this one.
Where does he draw the line? You know, you'll have to remove these items from the store. You know, would that be reasonable accommodation?
So there's a question of is the concern that we're letting individuals now say what their beliefs are.
Yeah.
And those beliefs could be anything, and they don't have to prove that it actually has anything to do with anything written in any holy book anywhere.
Right.
So how could you possibly reasonably accommodate people if you start out saying you don't get to tell me – you, the employee, don't get to tell me, the employer – what the teachings of your belief system are.
Well, I mean, you say that.
Each one as an individual basis is all
yeah,
I can
you
think.
Say that as so if too. It's ridiculous, but I mean, let us not forget that the holy books are also just a bunch of shit that
they totally
that
are.
Somebody wrote
they,
down somewhere.
Yeah. They
and
totally
it
are.
Make a difference
but
to me.
Remember recent stories, recent, you know, past 10 years here in Texas, where there was the Buddhist temple that wanted to get its tax breaks as a religion. And encountered opposition from the state government because the way that the religious exemption thing is phrased is that religion is a thing where there's a supreme power, and Buddhism doesn't have that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And the problem that most atheists that I spoke to at the time recognized that is, in fact, the state putting itself in the position of interpreting people's religious beliefs for them.
Right.
And making the laws dependent on what those religious beliefs are. But also, it shouldn't be the government's business to determine what is a religion and what isn't.
Right. I think that the argument about making special exemption for a religion carries with it its own reductio ad absurdum.
Yeah.
Because Anytime you make a special, you carve out special exceptions for people's religious beliefs, you're explicitly saying, you can choose not to follow the law / the rules of your company / you know, whatever, whatever. As long as you really, really believe it without regard to any kind of verifiability of its truth value. And all this stuff that people are doing about saying, oh, it has to involve belief in a supreme being, or, oh, it has to be in a book older than 20 years old, or whatever arbitrary number they've come up with.
Right.
Those are all just running around to avoid the obvious implications that you are carving out these special exceptions that have no basis in fact, no matter what the religion is.
All right. So I think what I'm hearing, Russell, is that you agree with me that this particular issue raised in some of the emails, nitpicking over what the Quran does or doesn't say, right, and what the Muslim religion does or doesn't entail, is really not to the point.
Yeah, I totally don't care what the Quran says, because people will call themselves they'll call themselves Muslims and they'll make their own rules about what that means.
And I'm totally with you on the inherent problem with the concept of religious exemptions about anything. Totally with you there.
Yep.
Surprisingly, that was not – none of the responses we got, and we had like a dozen of them raised that issue. Another thing they did raise was the slippery slope with various hypotheticals about accommodating the beliefs of members of various other groups in various comical situations. For example, Tea Partiers refusing to check out products with pictures of Obama on them. As stupid as I think religious accommodations, the whole concept of that is, I don't know of a parallel law of political accommodation where people can get excused from doing things that they are just politically or philosophically opposed to without it going to the level of religion.
What about a conscientious objector to a war?
That's a thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So then could you can you now conscientiously object to just about anything?
I conscientiously object to
beans. You can't serve them to me anymore. Excuse me.
Well, we would have no trouble with people having a conscientious objection to beans and not having requesting the people not serve it to them.
Yeah,
gets served beans. That's the problem.
Okay, yeah. But this Muslim in the supermarket did not insist that nobody else check out the lady's pork and wine.
Oh, right.
Yeah, conscientious objection is an interesting thing, and I'd like to know more about specifically what that entails, because it is phrased, it might be just an artifact of the time when that was when that became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, as far as I know, doesn't have to be linked to religion.
Right.
It's not tapping into the special treatment that religious beliefs are getting. Because you could just say, I just don't want to kill anybody.
Right.
Right? But, and that's conscientious objection. You don't have to say, because I believe an invisible man in the sky told me it was bad.
But do the rules on accommodation have to specifically point out, you know, religion or disability? Or can it be anything?
I don't exactly know.
You want to hear what Wikipedia has to say about
what
conscientious
objectors? What does Wikipedia
objectors?
Have to say?
Yeah.
What does the final arbiter of all knowledge have to say?
Yes, the absolutely objective and definitely true things.
That's right.
A conscientious objector is an individual who has claimed the right to refuse to perform military service on the grounds of freedom of thought, conscience, and or religion. In general, conscientious objector status is only considered in the context of military conscription and not applicable to volunteers. The international definition of conscientious objection officially broadened on March 8, 1995, when the United Nations Commission on Human Rights Resolution 1995/83 stated that persons performing military service should not be excluded from the right to have conscientious objections to military service.
Hmm. Okay.
So, okay. I mean, it is a legal term that is recognized by various bodies.
But right. it is limited to the issue of military service.
Right. Yeah,
and
it's
right.
not, in that little box.
It is
it's
not a
narrow.
Thing that is relevant to working at a supermarket yet.
Right. For now.
At the moment. So what we have is – see, and I don't know. I do know that that religious freedom is a class of concerns, of legal concerns,
sure.
right? And that reasonable accommodation of people's religious views, their need to get time off for holidays and
right.
so on, that is in fact a thing. And that people with disabilities – that's another class of concerns,
right. right?
And they need to have reasonable accommodation legally. And I guess so. I guess there's a question of whether religion should even be one of those things. It is right now, but there is an open question whether it should be.
Yeah, whether you're deaf or have some other disability, that's not a choice on your part. Is religion a choice?
Having a
does that even matter?
Conscientious objection to military service is a choice,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's a thing that is recognized
yes,
as
that's
a,
true.
So that's limited just to the area of military service, mm-hmm. but it's recognized as a thing where our society has decided to. Accept that as sufficient grounds,
right?
Even though it is a choice,
mm-hmm.
so the argument that disability is not a choice and religion is not necessarily the deciding factor,
right?
Could be right. very relevant. I don't have a legal background, so that was another kind of thing that people brought up. A third thing was. The whole issue of comparing being religious to being disabled. I think that yes. people grabbed this and ran with it. It's certainly the idea that being religious could be considered a disability is extremely amusing.
Yes.
Or on the flip side, the idea that as soon as you call yourself religious, you get access to a bunch of special considerations like disabled people get – is unfair,
right?
Right and bad, but I think everybody that reacted to this took it the wrong way. Tracy was
yeah.
using that as an example of a neutral example of the principle of
yeah.
reasonable accommodation. She was not saying that reasonable accommodation is a thing for disabled people. And religious people are part of that. No,
right.
those are different.
They're not the same thing.
Right.
Disabled people have a right to be disabled without that necessarily preventing employment. Mm-hmm. And religious people have a right to their beliefs without that necessarily preventing employment.
Right.
So the need for reasonable accommodation exists in both cases.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make them both the same thing. But you know, it seems like in our last topic we kind of raised the issue of whether there should even be such a thing as a class of people that are religious or a class of rights that are religious
right.
rights. I think we should talk about this more because I'm really nervous about the idea of that going away. Because if that goes away, if the idea of letting people say what their religious views are and having to take that seriously and not being able to punish them on that basis, right? If that goes away, then what's left, right? then the government is in the position of deciding for everyone what they can or cannot do, philosophically, and that will apply to us atheists as well. So I'm nervous about that
concept. Doesn't the government, by and large, already decide what we can and can't do in the form of laws which are made by representatively elected bodies?
No. What I mean is, okay, but I'm talking about this, the personal beliefs thing. What the government would be doing is not just telling us what we can and can't do, but what we will and will not – what beliefs will and will not trump others.
Right.
Well, if there isn't religious freedom.
Yeah, self-imposed exceptionalism. It's just weird.
I mean, I don't think beliefs should trump laws, but of course that puts the onus on – the political system to produce good and just laws.
And if people weren't free to have those beliefs without being punished for them, right, then you can't have a society full of people with varied beliefs from whom you get the votes that decide how the country's going to operate.
Well, the system can and should always allow people to believe whatever they want. It's just – they shouldn't be able to take special actions based on those beliefs.
Okay, so but the government has to decide what the baseline is, right? And of course, we all think that a baseline is obviously, evidence-based reality.
Right.
Right? But there's no particular guarantee that that's exactly how it would come out if we dispensed with religious liberty. There's no guarantee that what we would have instead is, everybody's just going to operate by what is obvious. And
there's no guarantee now. I mean, every few years, the Texas school board gets together, just to pick a handy example.
Yeah.
And they start trying to throw in a bunch of non-scientific nonsense into the science
books.
They
sure do.
And we already have this big uphill battle going on.
Yep.
Continuous.
Yeah. Constant, never-ending battle to stop people who don't believe in science from injecting nonsense into science textbooks.
Right.
Yes.
The notion that somebody's beliefs give them special privileges, if anything, makes it more likely to provide a door for that to happen, not less. It doesn't provide a safeguard. I'm not sure.
It's not a safeguard I'm looking for. It's, guys, do you agree that people have the right to believe whatever they want?
Yes.
Do you think that somebody who believes something very strongly should necessarily be punished because of what they believe?
Not because of what they believe.
But what they do.
But beliefs lead to actions.
Right.
Sure they do.
Which we can punish those actions.
Yeah. This is a much longer topic.
Yes.
let's pick another example, and I'm not comparing anyone to this example directly, but... some people are pedophiles in the sense that they have these urges to do things to kids.
Right.
But not all pedophiles
act on that.
Molest kids.
Right.
And at the point where they molest kids, they should go to jail.
Right.
But the fact that they have these private thoughts,
that
shouldn't send them to
jail. Yeah, we don't like thought crime.
But again, I'm not saying that religion is like secret pedophilia because
– Right. No, no.
That's not what I mean at all.
Right. I know. It's coming up with a neutral example and picking the most controversial things you could possibly say for your neutral example. All right. Well, I totally agree. The whole religious exemptions thing is goofy and problematic, and I'm – I just want to do due diligence before we conclude one way or another on this topic. It's interesting. Yep. Okay. So finally, somebody brought up this point that the employer is the one who's responsible for the reasonable accommodation, not the customer.
Right.
And so while the Muslim guy may have been within his rights, the rights in his job to send the customer over to the machine, that he wasn't within his rights as far as the customer is concerned. Well, the customer is more than welcome, it seems to me, and completely free to complain, to not shop there, to never go shop there again, to complain about what the bad experience they had, and I'm not quite sure what this issue is. I mean,
is this guy telling us how much of a hardship that is on his business?
Right. Well, this response is saying the employer has already determined how much of a hardship it is on his business, but somehow the feelings of the customer trump freedom of the Muslim, and I don't see how that trumps anything at all. I don't like it. I'd be really, really annoyed, but annoyed is different from, legally harmed.
Right. You're annoyed, not oppressed.
Yeah. So, honestly, folks, I mean, none of us sitting here are on top of all the legalities here. But
I just want to remind people that no legal action was ever in danger of being taken against this Muslim employer. The issue is
– Employee.
The employee. The issue is the employee says, I refuse to do part of my job.
Yep.
May the employer say, okay, then you're fired.
This whole time we've been talking about reasonable accommodation from the U.S. perspective.
Right.
And, of course, this business
was
in Britain.
You don't know what it is in Britain.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
And possibly some of these letters included some information on that I didn't bring in because it was too much.
Because
apparently
cares about
in the U.S., though.
That's not why.
To refuse the employee's request, the employer has to show – how was it phrased? Undue harm to his business.
And the fact is that what the employee did is said, I can't check you out, ma'am. There's an automated machine right there. Which I don't like those things. I don't use them if I can avoid it. But they exist. They will get the job done. It's an inconvenience, but so was it an inconvenience at Tracy's business where – the employer had to acquire a special piece of hardware so that the deaf person could operate the phone, right?
Right.
It's an inconvenience. That's what reasonable accommodation is. Reasonable accommodation is not, you have to bend over backwards as long as no bending is required, right?
Right.
It means you have to slightly bend.
Mm-hmm.
I am not in favor of people going into businesses and using that as a platform to wave their stupid religious beliefs around. I'm not in favor of that, but I'm not really clear on what the alternative is.
Hang on. Right. Can you remind me? There's a detail of the story that I'm not remembering.
Okay.
Would the employer have wanted to make the Muslim check out the lady with the meat?
I have no idea. It's not in the story.
Because that's relevant.
He doesn't say – my understanding is that it's a relatively large supermarket chain. And as far as I know, it's not a Muslim supermarket chain.
The
Why?
Employer could just decide on their own, hey, we're a business where we want to be sensitive to Muslim beliefs. And some of our checkout people may at times not check you out, and that's just the way things are at our supermarket.
Right.
In which case, people might take that into account and maybe decide not to shop there. Mm-hmm. But it's okay for the employer to do that, right?
Yeah, it's the employer's decision on what constitutes an undue hardship.
And well, again, from the U.S. perspective,
yeah.
That's Britain.
Oh, from the U.S. perspective, we don't know Britain.
But we're okay
you know,
with that.
The world is the world is full of people on all sides of all issues mm-hmm. looking to take advantage, right? I mean, when some stupid judge somewhere rules that a Christian Ten Commandments monument can remain on a courthouse lawn because it's a place where people are free to put up their damn monuments, and
right.
the Satanists come along and put up their Satanism monument,
yes.
they are taking advantage of the rules.
Right.
If the rules say employers have to make reasonable accommodation for the religious beliefs of their employees, and a religious guy in that situation takes advantage of that to not handle products that his religion is against, but instead to send the customer over to a machine,
mm-hmm.
they're going to do that. That everybody does that on all sides of all issues, and then at the end of the day, we look at what the outcome is, and that is the basis on which our society decides what the rules are going to be.
Right.
Right? When the Satanists put up their monuments
their awesome monument.
Alongside the Ten Commandments, right? It is, you know, partly I'm sure they have as much right to wave
yeah.
their stupid beliefs around as anybody else,
exactly.
but it's also partly to raise the public awareness about the problem inherent in the way the judge interpreted that case.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to raise – this issue with the Muslim checkout guy is going to raise public awareness about what may be wrong with the whole concept of
right.
accommodating people's dumbass religious beliefs. I just, you know, I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to I would hate to see us as a culture overreact the other way and wind up with a state philosophy that determines what's right and wrong for everyone.
Yeah.
And
what constitutes a religion and what doesn't.
And what constitutes a religion or doesn't, and you know what, and have the government decide what the beliefs of each religion
yeah,
are.
Yeah.
You know, you think this issue itself is a slippery slope. Think of the slippery slope that opens up when you try to go the other way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is why the first point
let's
I
just
made,
be careful
was that basically once you allow special exemptions for religion, you are basically on a slippery slope to casting a wide net for you can make a special exemption for anything you might happen to claim to believe.
Right. Basically,
there is no difference.
You're rolling a can of worms down a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Well, that was long. Good. Cause
yeah.
that was a lot of emails. Russell, shall we do some news?
Yeah.
Wait, you got some news?
Did you finish all the points in the emails?
I did.
Okay.
The last, yeah.
All the main points, yeah.
I got a Pope story.
You do?
Talking about things that there are
Pope
more
me.
Important things than, as we were at the beginning. You mentioned before the show that the Pope had another thing that I didn't have, but I don't
brought that
what
up.
That was.
I brought that other story.
Okay.
Cool. It shouldn't be relevant to the story you're
All
about
right.
to read.
No, it's not. The Pope... Pope Francis has been urging the young not to waste time on the internet and smartphones.
Yes, no,
oh,
your
well,
time,
that
your,
should
your
work.
Time on the internet and on the smartphones is important. It is crucial that you use it wisely.
There you go, problem solved.
Oh, and also watching TV soap operas, because that's also under the same.
Do not waste your time when watching TV soap operas. Watch The Young and the Restless, and do not watch The Brave and the Bold.
I hear the hip happening thing for kids these days is going out to parks and watching puppet shows.
Ladies.
When they punch each other.
Ladies and gentlemen, here beside me in his mask is Super Pope. See, I have proven now we are not the same
yes.
individual.
Don't
welcome.
Listen to their
welcome,
fiction.
Super
listen
Pope.
To our
I have
fiction.
Brought, I have brought Super Pope here to agree with me on these questions.
Yes,
of,
Clark
use
Pope
of,
is correct.
Use of internet and television time is very important.
Pope Francis has urged 50,000 German altar servers not to waste time on the internet, smartphones, and television, but to spend their time on more productive activities.
50,000?
Such as?
How did he urge just precisely 50,000? Who?
Well, I think there were 50,000 people listening to him talk. Oh. And so,
okay. Well, what are the more important things to do?
50,003.
Yes.
Plus the size of your audience, which is what, another 20?
Maybe many young people waste too many hours on futile things, the Pope said in a short speech to the altar servers.
He didn't say
the
futile.
Irony is
and
thick.
He didn't say futile. He said futile, right?
Futile, yes.
And not constructive things like, you know, whispering your prayers to an invisible man in the sky.
Yes.
Yes.
The young people helped the priest during religious services.
Excuse me. Super Pope has just whispered in my ears. He is sometimes an invisible man in the sky. That is, those are amongst his powers. But he says, do not pray to him.
Yeah, it sounded like the Pope was talking to kids in the church.
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe so. They had come to Rome on a pilgrimage.
Oh.
They were probably standing outside the Vatican, and he was waving
he was
his arms
doing
at them.
This, shouting at them incoherently,
Our life is made up of time, and time is a gift from God, so it is important that it be used in good and fruitful actions.
Correct. And this is why, if you do subscribe to the Elder Scrolls Online, you should very carefully dole out your time. Do not play for more than, say, an hour at a time. And then go outside and run in the sun.
Because time is money.
And talk to the invisible man.
Yes. Activities cited by the Pope as futile were chatting on the internet or with smartphones, watching TV soap operas, and using the products of technological progress, which should simplify and improve the quality of life, but distract attention away from what is really important.
Yes. TV soap operas are not good. But if you're going to watch the television, you should watch good shows.
But what's really important is technology. Come on.
I really like that show Game of Thrones, but I'm not sure if they're really naked.
Game of Thrones is good. Also, Hemlock Grove on the Netflix. Yeah. I enjoy that very much.
I hear that's terrible.
It's not terrible. Okay. Season 1 was better than Season 2. I think because Season 1 was based on the original novel and Season 2, the writers are just going off on their own and they're not. It's not nearly as compelling.
But but I digress.
Pope Francis is making a career shift in the TV critic.
In the control room of the Vatican, we have the wall of monitors. I'm watching all the television shows all at once. It is – they were coming up with a new thing for me called In Cathodia, where I sit in front of the cathode ray tubes and watch the television shows. When I'm sitting in my chair, I can watch all television programs simultaneously.
Cool.
But, Orange is the New Black. That's a good show. Sorry, go ahead.
It has that nun.
Does it? I've only begun watching Season 1.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little behind.
I'm sure you'll enjoy it, Pope. He has described the internet as a gift from God. But,
of course.
Yeah.
And Al Gore. Al Gore and God got together. This is why everyone was so angry at Al Gore when he claimed that he invented the internet. Yes. It was a co-creation of Al Gore and the Lord God.
Anyway, this article is kind of short, and he never does get around to saying what these more worthwhile activities are.
Which means Al Gore gets only one quarter of the credit because God consists of Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
That's true. Right.
Yes. Next big initiative will be the Catholic Church would like a royalty on the use of the internet. Because it was a gift from God.
Ah.
Not so much a gift as a, it's a gift in the sense of a thing that's very convenient, that's made available by God, but you do have to pay to use it.
it's a gift with strings attached.
Yes.
Wow. So again, what you're asked to do is, there's no real specifics in that. list of things.
No, yeah. But the Pope isn't big on specifics.
He didn't say not don't be on the internet at all. Did he?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, you could just say this is good advice.
You're wasting too much time.
Don't overuse it. It's good advice that I don't follow.
Don't text while driving.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome. So the you want me to go into my Pope story since it can be like a twofer?
Yep. Segue from one Pope to the next.
Vatican City. China has reacted cautiously. This was a story submitted by listener Tom from St. Paul, Minnesota, mm-hmm. which I'm reading. I normally don't do news, but there, so much of the news, the listener mail was taken up by responses to the Muslim supermarket story.
Right.
I'm going to do a bit of news sent in by a listener. Vatican City. China has reacted cautiously to a bid by Pope Francis to open new dialogue with Beijing, with some officials quick to warn the Vatican not to interfere with the country's religion.
Mm-hmm.
Not to interfere with China's religion.
I imagine their state religion?
Yeah. On his return flight from a 5-day tour of South Korea, Francis said he was ready to go to China for sure tomorrow, he says. After receiving a positive response to two goodwill telegrams he sent to President Xi Jinping as the Pope flew over Chinese airspace. We would expect the Chinese people, Francis told journalists on the return flight on Monday, August 18, the church only asks for liberty for its task, for its work. Now what work is that, mm-hmm. Pope Francis? Getting your fingers into freaking everything and in the meanwhile shielding rapists from molesting children?
Basically passing the plate.
Passing the plate, collecting money from people in exchange for it, doing crap all for them.
Right. You see, those are worthwhile activities. And if people spent too much time on the internet, they wouldn't be doing that.
It occurs to me, doesn't China also have try to impose some pretty serious limitations on internet use within its borders?
Yes.
I would have thought that his work is done there.
Yeah, they're already on board.
They're already not using the internet for everything that they might like. That is still a huge challenge, as the Vatican has not had diplomatic relations with China since 1951.
Oh, is that right?
The Catholic Church in China is divided between an official church known as the Catholic Patriotic Association, answerable to the Communist Party, and an underground church that swears allegiance to Rome. And I just want to mention, I've always been, philosophically in agreement with, China and with Russia back when it was the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. on the subject of the danger of religion and wanting to keep it from getting out of control, but completely opposed to the way they want to go about it. Because here we have a country that has solved its religion problem by having a state religion.
Right.
And not in the way – see, I like the way that it worked in Europe, where the state religions were, there's – the government picks one religion and basically – supports that one.
Right.
But other religions are not disallowed from operating.
Right. They just don't have the advantages.
And the fact that they are outcompeted by the government-backed religion has just weakened the influence of religion across the board. And now this is my theory of the mechanic behind why Europe appears to be the way it is now. But that's not what they're doing in China, right?
Right.
In China – there's only the ones that they officially condone, and everything else is oppressed. And when you give people oppression as a thing to rally behind, then you get, you get your pro-religion fanatics.
It's not happy. And they go underground.
The state-run Catholic Patriotic Association was quick to respond to the Pope's overtures for greater dialogue, albeit with a warning. And there's a quote here. But of course, this is the Chinese Communist Party talking.
Right, right.
China will always see
fire. Oh, please, God, no.
Sorry. Oh, China will always safeguard its sovereignty and territorial integrity, man. And never allow foreign forces to interfere with religion. The Vatican should respect China in terms of the personnel of a diocese. Yuan Long, vice president of the association, told
me. This one is going to get us in trouble, Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
I toned it down after the.
No.
And I'm making. It's communists. So. I'm making fun of communists. I do apologize. The Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs is unhappy with the Vatican's diplomatic recognition of Taiwan, while the Vatican is unhappy with Beijing's strict control of religious institutions, particularly the appointment of bishops. This is what's interesting to me. I have a problem with China's strict control of religious institutions.
Mm-hmm.
The Vatican objects to China's strict control of religious institutions, particularly the appointment of bishops.
Right.
It's that the institutions there are posing as – there's an institution they're posing as Catholicism.
Right.
But it's the Communist Party
mm-hmm.
appointing people to run it.
Right. And the Vatican doesn't get to say yay or nay.
They especially object
they want
to the thing
more control.
They especially object to the thing where some of their territory has been taken over by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Zhu Jinping, director of the Institute of World Religions at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, presumably another state organization, told another state-run outlet, China Daily, that he welcomed the Pope's move, saying Francis had been active in improving Vatican ties with Beijing since he was elected in March 2013. So, there you go. Francis has been active in improving Vatican relations with Beijing, and I'm not sure that's a good thing.
No, it's a huge new market. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, coincidentally, I have two stories out of China today.
You do? Wow, that's just going to roll right back into
one,
China.
I'm not sure, but might actually be an extension of the same story. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how it's related.
Okay.
But according to thinkprogress.org, China is irritated with Christianity and has decided to create its own version.
I read something about that, yeah.
Chinese government officials announced on Thursday, now this story is from the 7th, so okay. It would be mm-hmm. the Thursday before that,
okay.
That they plan to create a new state-sanctioned version of Christian theology, the
wow.
latest in an uptick of attempts by the government to curtail the growing influence of religion in Chinese culture. Oh, that's a cute little paradoxical move.
Yeah, isn't it?
Speaking to the state-run China Daily newspaper, Wang Zhuan, director of the State Administration for Religious Affairs, told reporters that the new effort would seek to marry Christian theology with established Chinese norms. Over the past decade, I'm not doing a Chinese accent, thanks.
Good luck rebranding
why
this
not?
Thing. Yeah.
Why not? Do a respectful one.
God, don't think there is such a thing.
I just have to ad lib it right now, and I'm not ready to
right.
do that.
Yeah.
Well,
over the past
decades, as well.
Over the past decades, the Protestant churches in China have developed very quickly with the implementation of the country's religious policy. He said, "The construction of Chinese theology should adapt to China's national condition and integrate with Chinese culture."
And this is, of course, what you want to be worried about anytime any government decides to get rid of – to not have separation of church and state, right, is the tailoring of religion into a machine to promote that government's
right.
views rather than being a parallel structure.
I wonder if this is a new opportunity to re-edit the Bible.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. Just take out the bad parts.
Yeah.
Did it seem to you guys like stories about new versions of the Bible used to be a lot more common?
I don't know.
I remember over the last, you know, few decades hearing a lot more stories of like that a lot more frequently. And now either it's become so common that it doesn't make the news anymore,
uh-huh.
or it's died off. And I'm not sure which of those two things is true.
That's weird.
Hmm. I don't know. but I mean, to your point, a country which can declare that religion is illegal can with in the next breath or 50 years later, let's say, go ahead and say, and this is the religion you should be following.
Right.
So they are equally dangerous sides of the same coin, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, which is why I kind of prefer the European approach, where the government picks one that it's going to favor, and lets all the rest of them be legal, but because the one that's getting favors, it outcompetes.
Right.
And because it's the government run one, everybody knows it's bullshit, and religion just dwindles.
Yep.
There's a little nonprofits bookkeeping that I feel like I haven't been bringing up regularly.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, just regular, like sort of announcement-y stuff, which is that, one of the main sources I use to get my news is from Twitter. And so if you happen to be, on the Twitter machine and, during the week you happen to read a news story where you think, wow, that would be perfect for the nonprofits, you can tweet that using the hashtag nonprofitsnews, P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S.
Right.
And I will see it by the time the next show rolls around.
And hopefully we'll be more perfect.
Yes. More perfect.
More perfect.
All right.
Also, if you're in Austin, people are still invited to come down to the studio on the first and third Wednesday of the month, sometime before 7 o'clock, to watch us through the glass. Please do not tap on the glass.
Right.
We hate that.
Don't feed us.
Yes, indeed, please. We're just because we're an audio show doesn't mean we're not interesting to look at.
Yeah. Okay. I, for one, am very interesting to look at.
And he's closest to the glass.
So. Yeah,
that's true.
But you can't videotape us and then, you know, coo into the cameras how cute
we
might
are have to move. We might have to move those chunks of sound absorbing foam, though, if
also,
we're going to have more people watching.
One
Our current audience pretty much can't see us.
Yes. One more bookkeeping thing, which is that when I went outside to get a drink, our current audience, who I don't know if the audience wants to be identified.
I wouldn't.
But reminded me that several of the things that we've said warrant the phrase, we're not lawyers, don't take our advice on
yes.
legal issues.
Of course.
So,
and we said that.
Just reminding you of that.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Okay.
A few episodes ago, the three of you responded to another listener email regarding the definition of positive atheism. Remember this?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You all gave superb explanations as to what it meant for you personally, but I seem to remember there being a technical definition of positive atheism. Correct me if I am wrong here, but isn't positive / explicit atheism the assertion that the claim at least one deity exists is false, whereas negative / implicit atheism refrains from making this assertion? No.
Words have more than one meaning, dude.
There is a dichotomy between, you know, what some people call explicit atheism and implicit atheism, and that may well – I think that is what you're describing.
Right.
But the terms positive and negative are not part of that.
No, they can be.
They can be?
Yeah, there are positive and negative atheism that specifically refer to definitely there is no God versus
right.
I don't believe in God.
So what was your objection that you just raised to what this guy was saying?
Just because that definition exists doesn't mean it's the one we're using.
Right. I doubt the ACA was talking in a deeply philosophical sense.
Yeah, as I in, think they were we only more... promote the absolute denial of God.
No.
And what the organization officially means by those terms is not necessarily what us individuals mean by those terms.
Right. I've had strong arguments with Jen over this same issue, and Jen is the president, but I still don't agree with her definition.
All right. Russell?
Okay, so I said I had more than one story out of China. This one is from BBC. There's this Chinese cult that's killing demons. And this is basically strikes me as the movie Frailty come to life.
Oh, boy.
China is about to try one of the most notorious murders in recent memory.
Frailty is, of course, an excellent film, but do not watch it on the internet. Should get. I believe the DVD is now marked down to about
$9.99. Yes.
Go to any reputable video store.
Kids, don't torrent. In late May, a group belonging to a banned cult beat a woman to death in a fast food restaurant. Her only crime was to refuse to give them her telephone number. Oh, so it's got some creepy nice guy vibe as well as being a cult. It's like a twofer. Wouldn't give her her phone number. Jeez. The cult in question is called the Church of the Almighty God and claims to have millions of members. It was an ordinary evening in a small town, McDonald's, in East China until a family of six arrived, trying to recruit new members to their Christian cult. They moved between the tables, asking for phone numbers. When one diner refused, they beat her to death, screaming at other diners to keep away, or they would face the same fate.
I have two immediate responses to this. One is, so that's why China is concerned about the prevalence of religion in their country. And the second is, I'm sorry, who is telling us this story and might be in the position of wanting to make religion look bad? I don't trust Chinese news organizations because Chinese news organizations.
No, this is the BBC.
They know this is a fact. How? Where do they get the story?
I don't know.
I'm just saying.
Interviewed in prison later, one of the murderers, Zhang Lidong, showed no remorse and no fear. He said, "I beat her with all my might and stamped on her too. She was a demon. We had to destroy her."
Oh, she was a demon.
Yeah, that's...
Come on, that's worth a voice.
Yikes.
All right,
no.
Sure.
What? So, that's horrible.
Yes.
You're against that.
What the hell?
Very.
Definitely worth a WTF. Yes.
I'm betting Pope Francis is against that, too.
I hope so.
I'm not even going to try. Okay. That's horrible. That's it. That's what you got.
I don't know what to say. About
I mean, there's more of the story.
Could you check to see what their source was?
Okay.
If it even says.
Yeah. Because
I'm just suspicious.
No more mail.
There's more mail.
Oh, good.
How are we doing on time?
We're about an hour in, and you know that means it's close to time.
As soon as I'm done with this. In a recent Nonprofits, the topic of transhumanism arose, and Jeff suggested Diaspora by Greg Egan as a novel that explores many ideas related to transhumanism. I got the book from Audible and have finished it. The first chapter and a few other long sections here and there went very in-depth into computer science, astronomy, and theoretical physics to an extent greater than I've ever read before, and maybe too much. Yes, that's Greg Egan for you.
It happens.
In fact, his latest novel, which I just got, is – I wouldn't recommend to anyone because it was aliens rediscovering, like, the fundamental forces of nature.
Yeah.
And, while fascinating, it was a long, hard slog. Despite this, I thought it was a fascinating read and that the author did a great job of exposing the reader to a great number of ideas that would be possible if you start uploading minds into computers and other forms of transhumanism. Thank you. There was one quote from the book that was very interesting. It was, quote, conquering the galaxy is what bacteria with spaceships would do, knowing no better, having no choice. I believe the point of that mm-hmm. is an explanation for how come in this the future in that book, it's not about, like, the human space empire conquering the right. planets. I should mention, though, that in the most the previous Greg Egan book that I read presents a future that is a vast interconnected civilization of different races all on all these different planets. I don't know if conquering was involved exactly, but right. he himself in other novels has explored the idea of big interconnected civilizations between various between stars. So I don't think that's necessarily a indication of his personal heartfelt philosophy. Mm. Keep up the show and keep the sci-fi discussions coming. Remember when you used to talk about things like X-Files or the His Dark Materials movie adaptations, says Renita from Canada. Thank you, Renita. We talked some TV shows this yeah. episode. And we
talked about the Noah movie before.
We're geeks. Yeah, we did a whole review of Noah.
Yeah, we did a whole Game of Thrones discussion.
Only of the naughty bits.
Yes, yes.
Of Game of Thrones. Literally. All right. Russell, so you got something you want to tell us about?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have some shit. Internet apologists say.
What are they saying these days?
I actually had a rejected choice for shit internet apologists uh-huh. say, because at first I was directed to this site called unbiasedscience.org.
Oh boy.
Which has all manner of truly hilarious stuff, but the more I looked at it, the more I realized it was a little too hilarious.
Uh-huh. Uh-oh.
I put out like a quick Twitter message yesterday and asked people whether they thought it was satire. And a lot of people pointed out what ridiculous things they were saying and said it's proof that it was satire. And I said, no, it's not.
It's not. I need a definitive answer.
But I think I was still slightly on the side of somebody is having a joke.
Yes,
and
let's hope.
I just want to say this is a personal pet peeve of mine, like deliberately invoking Poe's Law if this was a fake mm-hmm. on purpose. If I have a really hard time telling the difference, then it's not good satire. I'm just saying.
Right.
I'm just putting that out there.
Well, so you're saying your segment is not called...
It's not.
Shit. Pretend Christians say. I didn't get the reason.
Doesn't work for you.
I was you are hoping. Not the man.
Darn. Okay.
I'm proud to have that. What did happen this week is the suicide of Robin Williams, which was very sad.
Yes.
Anyone, before we get into this, want to say anything particularly about Robin Williams? Or anything. Sorry, I don't want to put you on the
Brilliant.
Spot.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a fan.
Yeah.
I liked him. Not everything he did was fantastic.
Oh, no.
But yeah. There are a lot of things he did that I liked very much.
And atheists might want to look for – he was not well known for an emphasis on religion-oriented comedy, but he did some. And there's some good bits out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, along with his death was and I picked one of many articles people were writing about his suicide. The ghouls that descend anytime a death happens, because this is a marketing opportunity, right?
Right.
This week I've got Jim Daly, the president of Focus on the Family. Now, I can't remember if I've used Jim Daly before, because I have him in my feed of things I specifically look at now.
Uh-huh.
So I may have already tapped this well before, but so many people are saying horrible things about Robin Williams' suicide this week. He's one of them. The death of comedian Robin Williams has reignited something of a nationwide conversation about suicide and mental health. After all, most know someone whose life has been touched or severely impacted by depression. My own wife, Jean, lost a brother to suicide, and Jean herself has shared that she struggled with bouts of depression earlier in our marriage.
Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting for this to go off the edge of a cliff.
Yeah. So far, it's very
sensitive.
Sounds
good right now.
Here at Focus on the Family, our counselors talk with severely depressed people every day. In fact, suicide-related calls have skyrocketed in the past few years.
He started gunning the engine on his little Jeep.
Yeah.
It's a somber subject, not the type of topic to try to understand or process with well-worn cliches or pop psychology.
Oh, boy. Here we go. You know,
so says the religion guy.
The little car is cranking to the top of the roller coaster right now.
Oh, that's
now,
your...
And we're starting to peer
see,
over
I'm
the
seeing,
edge.
I'm seeing this guy driving a Jeep along the edge of a cliff, right? The right. Waves crashing below, and his engine is just sputtered, and his wheels start spinning. The back end is going back and forth.
I'm also hearing Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain playing, you know, from Fantasia, like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Just the other day, in the aftermath of Williams' death, popular Christian writer Anne Voskamp described it this way, quote, depression is like a room engulfed in flames and you can't breathe for the sooty smoke smothering you limp, and suicide is deciding that there is no way but to jump straight out of the burning building. You don't try to kill yourself because death is appealing, but because life is agonizing. We don't want to die, but we can't stand to be devoured. But Anne is writing about the non-Christian, right? Doesn't Christianity and the hope and love it produces somehow inoculate the believer from the ravages of depression and mental illness?
No.
Okay,
your Jeep wheel
is agreeing with you.
Off the cliff.
No, he's turning back.
He's done a complete 180 in his little Jeep, and he's continuing to rock it along the dirt road.
You know what?
Are you finding that this is, in fact, not horrible?
This might actually turn out to be a multi-dimensional article.
Oh, shit.
Reasonable things internet apologists say.
You know what? I'm going to go through with this because I'm so used to using this as a foil to make Christians look bad. I
seems
feel
fair.
Like
seems
integrity
fair.
Should make me finish reading this article.
Just jump ahead to where he says, it's too bad Robin Williams wasn't one of our little minions.
Well, I'm going to keep reading.
Okay.
I know some Christians have made such a claim that it's merely mind over matter or a matter of thinking more positively in the face of adversity. As the logic goes, if we simply don't conform or cave to the patterns of this world, we'll be transformed by the renewing of our minds, Romans 12:2.
Don't care.
The Apostle Paul's words still ring true, but...
No, they don't.
No.
No. I think to try and suggest that faith in Jesus immunizes us from all the bad things of this world is a gross misapplication of Scripture.
Okay.
Then he quotes some more Bible, and I don't care.
Right? None of us care.
We're not one-dimensional people, but rather creation is comprised of body, mind, and spirit. And ever since the fall, we're vulnerable to attacks in all three of those areas of life. A Christian is...
We're not one-dimensional people. Nevertheless, I'm going to relate absolutely everything I say back to this one book.
Right.
Right. A Christian is no less susceptible to mental illness than to diabetes.
That's true.
Yes, God can help us overcome the plagues of this life, and that is the good news of what we believe in as Christians. It really is this simple. There is hope in Christ. But...
Show me. All right.
We might be headed toward the cliff with the next sentence.
All right.
And, if you or someone you love is currently struggling with depression or mental illness, we can help.
No, you can't.
On a related note, I'm pleased to announce that Focus on the Family has partnered with Lifeway Research to study the issue of mental illness and will be releasing our findings along with practical action steps in mid-September.
And their research will consist of reading the Bible and pulling out Bible quotes that they think are relevant.
Yeah. On the whole, this article, this post is still reasonably sensitive and not as self-serving as I was expecting.
So the little
Jeep, gonna give him that.
The little Jeep has just disappeared over the edge of the cliff. But our viewpoint so far is from behind the Jeep, from the top of the cliff. We see it disappear, but we haven't yet seen what happens.
Yeah, they're gonna go off and do research for a while. And of course.
Now the camera's panning up to the clouds.
Of course, this group does not believe in science generally. So I don't know what kind of research that means.
I do. I know exactly what kind of research. They're going to read the Bible and pull out quotes that they think are relevant.
I do pray that the conversation about mental illness in the wake of Robin Williams will call greater attention to the issue. I just read the other day that 22 military veterans take their own life every single day. Every suicide is tragic, and we must not turn our backs on those who suffer with depression. And then he asks the readers to write in and tell him what they think. But
you need to vet your crazy internet apology things.
I can't tell you that the Phelps want to protest at his funeral.
Right.
Of course. Yeah, so this article alluded to the fact that there are slavering hordes of Christians out there using this as a marketing opportunity, but I'm going to admit this was not one of them.
All right. Right. Well, it still counts as shit internet apologists say. It just wasn't as fun as
some of
the
others. Wasn't
as
shitty as
we come to expect.
But the whole notion of I don't know if you guys go back that far enough. There was a there is a branch of psychology or a technique in psychology. I think it's called rational emotive therapy, which has to do with helping people with emotional problems by grounding them in reality more, right? And there was a news story that came out about this Christian organization that got hold of rational emotive therapy and concluded, well, since the reality is Christianity, we're going to help people by teaching them Christianity.
Right.
That's reality. And not what's more, if you don't believe in Jesus, you're irrational.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thing that happens when Christians get a hold of psychology or start trying to do that work.
Yeah.
These are not trained, qualified individuals. I mean, it's a difficult field even for those who have approached it reasonably.
Right. But Christians trying to do this, they embrace their bias. They don't try to eliminate it.
Right. No evidence that shows that the angle they're coming at it from is wrong is going to count because that's faith. Well.
Okay.
All right then. Let's go on with another email. I wanted some help understanding the moral behind the parable of the prodigal son. And let me stop right there. Do you guys know the parable of the prodigal son?
He goes away for a while and then he comes back. It's a story told by Jesus, right? And the son goes away and he's roundly praised by his father for coming back more than he would have been if he'd just stuck around and been nice all those years, I think. Is that close?
I I'm asking you guys if you know it, because I don't really.
I think that's the gist of the story.
We are being asked in this letter to interpret a parable with which none of us are particularly familiar.
I'm looking it up.
Okay. Russell's going to look it up. While you look it up, I'll read the letter. It being the story that started me on the path of clarity away from the church. I saw the parable played out in a performance of Godspell.
Okay.
When I saw it, I only interpreted it literally as the story of two sons, one of whom squanders the things he's given by his father and is then immediately forgiven for it. As an older brother who's held to a higher standard than my younger siblings, it hit a little too close to home for me, and I immediately started having doubts about this whole good book thing.
Okay, I think I've got more details on this,
okay.
And I was on the right track.
Good.
There's two sons.
Yeah.
The father gives them both a bunch of money.
Yeah.
The older son is prudent and saves the money, and the younger son wastes it all on gambling or whatever. He wastes it all.
Yep.
And then a famine comes, and he goes hungry, so... when the son gets all the money, he runs off on his own and ditches the family. But then later, he comes back begging for food.
Right.
The father throws a feast in his honor, and the older son is like, wait a minute, why should my good-for-nothing brother get all this stuff? And the story concludes, I think, with some trite words about how important it is to forgive people and
okay.
You know, that's the general idea. And I think the parallel is seen as significant about how we're all terrible people, but we'll get to heaven because Jesus is like the Father who's generous.
Right.
I believe that's
that's not my take on it. I remember this now.
Okay.
I think that the difference is the point, the moral of the story is now this isn't the moral. I think this is the mimetic function of the story.
Yeah,
is that and it kind of explains to me why you get so many, you know, like swaggerts who get caught doing horrible things and then turn that around and they are just more successful.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That when you get caught doing something bad or when you have left the religion for a while, right, it gives you an opportunity. A character who goes through that gets an opportunity to come crawling back.
Okay.
And this parable is about the way God loves to have people come crawling back.
Yeah.
Right. It is about the submission and the fact that he doesn't care about the money. He cares that he's had this opportunity for this one son to come back and abase himself.
Right.
And if you do that, he'll give you all this stuff. And Christianity has always been about, you know,
throw you a feast.
Abase yourself in front of the God and then he gives you all kinds of stuff.
You'll get a greater reward in heaven.
Right. And I will now go off on a little tangent. This reminds me of the story I heard, not from the Bible, but at church when I was a little kid. The thing which I'm pretty sure made me suspicious of the whole enterprise.
Okay.
The minister, and this is the Methodist church, right? These are relatively they're largely referred to as liberal Christians, right? Mm-hmm. At worst, middle of the road kind of, you know, workaday Christians. Not your crazy
fire and brimstone.
They're not fire and brimstone evangelists whatsoever. But the minister told this story, I kid you not, and I remember the incident and it made me nearly vomit. Mm-hmm. The analogy he told was a little boy trying to teach his dog tricks. Right? Mm-hmm. God's the little boy, and we're the little dog, right?
Okay.
Okay.
And the little dog's not getting it. And the boy loses his temper, and he beats his dog.
Uh-huh.
Bloody. There was graphic description.
What?
Right.
In this church, by the minister, of the little boy beating his dog.
Okay.
But the boy's the good guy.
Hang on.
Okay.
And the little dog responds by desperately trying to do the trick.
Right.
Aww.
And the little boy sees this, and his heart is filled with love. I kid you not, this is the story that was told as an analogy between God and us. God beats the fucking crap out of us. I'm a little angry now because I'm remembering this horrible story. Beats us bloody. But as long as we come groveling to him, right? Beats us bloody for not obeying.
Yeah.
As long as we come groveling back to us, he will accept us back with love.
Yeah, I think I just threw up a little bit in my mouth.
Now, I get the idea of, you know, it's you know those, there's websites where they compile, like, pictures of cute things?
Yeah.
Yes. I know we've all gone to the page. Yeah. And those things, right? And they've they'll categorize, you know, small is cute and big eyes are cute. Right. Right?
Cats.
The waif thing. Yeah. Is cute. And being, you know, beaten up and sad. It's like at the end of the Chick Tract where the little kid who's been beaten by his father, like, crawls into a cardboard box in an alley and dies.
Mm-hmm.
There's something cute in a very sick way about the little emaciated, you know, dirty child.
Yeah.
That's what they're tapping into with stories like this. Really pisses me off. Yes. That's why I don't hesitate from calling Christianity fucking evil. So, what are we doing? We still got 8 minutes. Is there news you can do in 8 minutes, or shall I do another?
Because Shit Apologists Say was a flop, I'm going
to make it up to us.
I'm going to jump to a story from the Christian Post that I didn't think I needed to bother with.
Grovel, damn you, and we'll forgive you.
Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Kevin Sorbo, of course, I guess doing the movie tour for his DVD.
Sorbo, famous for playing a pagan hero. Guy who wouldn't have a career if it weren't for the fact that for a few seasons on TV, he played a high-profile, popular, well-known pagan hero.
Right.
Yes. What does he have to say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, by
demigod.
By the way, the son
of a Greek deity.
Before I get into what Kevin Sorbo said just now, I just want to mention I recently heard that while Hercules may be this hardcore Christian, Lucy Lawless, Xena, totally a non-believer.
All right.
So I think we got the better one.
Looks good on you, Xena.
Yeah.
All right, go on.
Actor Kevin Sorbo, who starred in the Christian film God's Not Dead, and remember, this is the Christian Post, so this is a complimentary story, says he did not have reservations about taking on an atheist role for the movie, but he admits that he does not understand the logic behind atheists' lack of beliefs and why they are so angry, a lack of understanding which is obviously clear from his acting in the movie.
You added that last line.
I added that bit, yes.
When you take on a role in for a film, aren't you supposed to try to understand the part that you're playing?
A little bit, yeah.
Uh-huh. It's probably worked to his advantage, though, because the script, if he understood the atheist viewpoint, I'm sure he would find the script not at all acceptable.
Right.
Yep. I'm a Christian myself, and I had to play an atheist.
He doesn't sound like that.
No.
Go for it.
I see the anger of these atheist guys on TV, and it's like, wow, how do you get so angry at something you don't believe in, said Sorbo. He added, what's interesting is that people say students don't get persecuted in universities because of their beliefs, but it does happen.
What's the big deal? I'm a live and let live kind of guy. If you're an atheist, fine. If you're an agnostic, we can talk. The movie is not to preach to the choir. We wanted the choir to come, and obviously they did.
wow.
Right.
Okay.
It was not to preach to the choir, but merely to pander to them.
Yes.
Well, I have to say, why are you so angry about something you don't believe in? Said every Christian ever.
Yeah.
Oh. I hate answering that for the 8 billionth time.
Furthermore, the actor said he is not fond of how atheists have a say in Christian traditions like Christmas. Oh, now we're getting really
we have
original.
A say?
It's funny how they can get nativity scenes pulled down because they say it offends them. But they're offended by something they don't believe in. What offends 90% of the country is that they take down nativity scenes, but apparently the majority doesn't have a voice in the country. So what are you going to do? Said Sorbo.
Well, apparently for Ken Sorbo, mob rule is what he wants. There you go.
Yep. The actor also noted that the film released earlier this year made over $62 million at the box office,
woo-hoo!
Which is notable for a faith-based genre movie whose budget was $2 million. All right. Yes, it is.
Its budget was $2 million, which is a testament to the fact that they didn't get a decent actor to play their main character.
Well, yeah, that's really low. What does that make him, like C-list? Is Kevin Sorbo a more respected actor than Kirk Cameron?
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Good
what a strange question.
Is,
I don't know.
Is he doing acting anymore?
Which one? Kirk Cameron?
Kirk Cameron?
Has
he been in anything recently?
No.
I don't know. I don't have time to check IMDb on that.
All I know is they got him for quite a bit less than $2 million.
Yeah.
And he also talked about Robin Williams, but I've skimmed the rest of this thing. And in a trend today, he also says very nice and
aww.
Sensitive things about Robin Williams and how much he liked him.
Right.
So,
well, good.
Yeah, good for him.
Well, he hasn't seen some of Robin Williams' bits on religion.
Right.
All right. Well... That appears to be the end of another show.
Is that it?
Does it?
Yeah. We're down to... We get 3 minutes left by my calculation.
Nah.
What?
All right.
You want some... Yes, and most you want to say?
No.
You can fit in another short comment.
Nope.
No? You don't
want
to beat up on... You don't
want to
beat up on Kevin Sorbo some more?
Hang on. Kirk Cameron...
versus IMDb. Kevin Sorbo. You know what would be cool is if they had one of those, like, animated fights to the death between those two.
Right.
Isn't there something like googlefight.com?
Uh-huh.
And now our regular segment, Russell Screws Around on the Internet.
you got 30 seconds to
Kirk
find
Cameron,
something.
Mercy Rule, 2014. Are you a good person?
Well, okay.
Fireproof, I remember that
as
his last notable movie that was from 2008.
Oh,
but I don't
right.
know what Mercy Rule is annotated as being a video, so I think...
Straight to video.
All right. All right. Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will be back the first Wednesday in September.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Excuse me.
What?
What?
Kirk Cameron has approximately 5 times more internet hits than Kevin Sorbo.
Okay.
I'm still not sure that counts for anything.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye. That was our show, and we hope you enjoyed it more than Open Carry. We'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks. Unless our priorities change. Until then, we leave you with I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma.
don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fate except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me that doesn't hurt. And that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky.